Case number 12-3111, United States of America v. Robert Henry, appellant. Mr. Axton for the appellant, Ms. Kelly for the appellee.
May it please the court, counsel. Assistant Federal Public Defender Tony Axton representing appellant Robert Henry. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The government breached the plea agreement in this case by failing to present complete information to the departure committee concerning Mr. Henry's cooperation. And for that reason, Mr. Henry seeks remand for specific performance of that obligation. The government failed to present information that Mr. Henry's, that the target against whom Mr. Henry had cooperated had a case in federal court, that it was pending trial, that he was likely to plead guilty, and that he was facing a significant amount of time. Indeed, there are no facts from which to discern that the value of the cooperation against this particular defendant at all in what the government presented.
Now, the way I read what the district court said was that the government had declined to seek the departure because the defendant had made false statements to the prosecutor, so you don't even really get to the question of the departure committee because that was a separate condition in the plea agreement. The government went on, as you know, for many pages explaining why it thought that the defendant had lied, and the district court seemed to just take that as a reason alone. What's wrong with what the district court did there?
There's nothing wrong with the government declining to file a 5K motion because they believe that the defendant lied. But under the terms of the plea agreement, the government had an obligation to present full information to the departure committee, and the defendant was entitled to that.
Can you help us just by really focusing on the difference, if any, between what the U.S. attorney did report and what you contend should have been reported? Because as I understand it, it was reported to the departure committee that this defendant was facing prosecution in Illinois, and I'm not sure what your position is in terms of the difference between facing prosecution and really facing prosecution so that he's likely to plead.
I understand. I'll start by saying that neither the court nor the defendant knows what the departure committee uses to decide. We know generally, but we don't know specifically what the departure committee uses to decide whether to grant a 5K or not. We do know in this case that there was a lie by the defendant, and that influenced. So we know that that was one factor, but we don't know the degree to which the cooperation could have outweighed that factor.
But that doesn't really answer the question, which is, what's the gap between the government's communication on the issue of cooperation and your understanding of what cooperation was?
Well, we know that the government represented to the court that the defendant had a prior conviction for child pornography, was a registered sex offender, not my client, but the target defendant, and that the undercover had sent a lead to the state. We don't even know the state, but a lead to the state, and that he was being prosecuted. What being prosecuted means is very ambiguous. You could be being prosecuted from the second you're arrested until the case is dismissed. None of this is concrete.
Taking that gap as the gap, is that enough to show bad faith on the part of the government in its obligation to present to the departure committee a fair picture of what's happened?
Well, I take issue with whether they have to present a fair picture of what happened to the departure committee. This is a plea agreement. The defendant was entitled to.
I thought that was your claim. They are under a good faith obligation to send such a picture.
I take issue with the phrase a picture, because we are requesting very specific performance under the terms of the plea agreement. The plea agreement says the departure committee will consider the full nature and extent. It doesn't say a picture of or a broad brush of. It says the full nature and extent of the defendant's cooperation.
What about the part earlier in the agreement, though, that says any refusal by your client to cooperate fully will constitute a breach of the agreement and will relieve the government of its obligations under this agreement. I realize that's a slightly different point, but that's where I think the district court got off the track, which was that, or stayed on the track, but got off where you wanted it to go, because it said that the defendant had lied, and that was the reason why that relieved the government of any obligations under the agreement.
I'm not sure that the district court actually said that it relieved the government of any obligations or actually found that the defendant breached the plea agreement. We would take issue as to whether the lie, which took place before he entered the plea agreement, was actually a breach of the plea agreement. The plea agreement is all prospective. All requirements for truthfulness are prospective. So if the lie took place before he entered it,
Judge Pillar,
how could that be the test? It seems to me that when the government is entering into a plea agreement, it is assessing, here's someone whose the seriousness of his criminal conduct is, you know, X, and it's worth it to us to get the kind of cooperation that he's proffered in exchange for more leniency. If it turns out that his criminal conduct is X plus Y, that might not be the right calculus for the government to enter into a plea agreement. So the notion about any lies that take place in the bargaining for the plea agreement are off the table just doesn't seem to me to be, in fact, the test.
I wouldn't say that that's the test for whether there was a lie, but once again, we were bound by this contract. And I'm not standing before you telling you that it is okay for a defendant to lie before entering into a contract. But if the government relied on that and relied on it to its detriment, then the government should have alleged that there was a breach, and the district court should have found that there was a breach. The district court did not find that there was a breach. The district court found that despite any other information that could have been presented to the departure committee, this lie outweighed that information. We're saying the government had an obligation under this plea agreement, even with his lie, to present everything, because the government was not released from its obligations. The district court would have had to have found a breach.
Okay, so I take you to be focusing on the sort of the side of the equation that has to do with the nature and extent of his cooperation. Even if it turns out that there was more serious unlawful conduct on the one side, you're saying, well, if the extent and nature of his conduct was also super full, then maybe he should have been recommended for a downward departure. On that side, I'm not sure that I'm really satisfied with that you've answered what is the nature and extent that was not reported. He cooperated by identifying an individual in Illinois, and prosecutors found and arrested that individual and proceeded to prosecute him. And time passed, and the prosecution was continuing. There's no testimony that your client gave that was not reported. There's no further conduct, indeed, that I'm aware of, that your client engaged in. So wasn't the full nature and extent of his cooperation, in fact, reported?
I continue to say no, because we don't know what the cooperation committee considers the most valuable. They might consider the most valuable that this defendant is not in state court and is in federal court. It may become even more valuable if the defendant is looking at a significant amount of time. That may suggest that the crime was more serious and the defendant helped in a more significant way and took someone more dangerous off the street. Because we don't know those things, what I'm saying to this court is the defendant, every defendant in a cooperation has a right to have everything put in front of the cooperation committee, because he doesn't know what is going to be the trigger, what's going to be most important, how they're going to weigh this. Once the government says we can put 80% in front of it, the court has no way to assess whether the last 20% would have made a difference, and the defendant. What? So we have to go back to the terms of the plea agreement. And because the plea agreement doesn't say most of the information or substantially all of the information. It says full and complete. The fact that they did not, the government did not present that it was in federal court, did not present that it was he was facing a significant amount of time, that it was scheduled for trial and not some speculative, it was a lead provided to this other jurisdiction and he was being prosecuted, that's fine, but that is not 100%. He was entitled to 100% under the terms of the plea agreement.
Why don't we hear from the government, and we'll give you your 3 minutes back for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Catherine Kelly on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, in this case, there was no breach of the plea agreement by the government. The government provided the necessary accurate information about the defendant's cooperation to the departure committee in this case. I think it's a fair inference given the statements that the Assistant U.S. Attorney made at sentencing that the prosecutor informed the departure committee of what's in the December 5th memo that it sent to the court. It's at page 124 and 125 of the appendix, which outline the defendant's cooperation. That information included that there were not one but two targets in this case, one in D.C. and then another that turns out it was in Illinois, although that wasn't mentioned that it was the state of Illinois in that particular memorandum. The information was that the defendant had agreed to go online to talk to targets from whom he had received child pornography, that when the undercover during those sessions took over the defendant's identity, the target sent several images, this is referring to the Illinois target, sent several images of child pornography to Washington, D.C. Further investigation revealed that that target had a prior child pornography conviction and was also a registered sex offender, which, of course, means that he was conclusively identified because they knew who he was.
How do we know that the prosecution informed the departure committee of what was in the December 5th memo? We don't really actually have a showing in the record of precisely what was told the departure committee.
What was precisely told the departure committee is not in the record itself, but at sentencing, the U.S. attorney stated that she'd submitted all the 5K information to the court, and there was also the cooperation memo that the government had submitted to the court on December 5th had been, in fact, filed with the district court at that time. And I may have misstated the pages. It's actually at page 136 and 137 of the appendix. So in addition to that, since we know that this person is registered.
But we don't know that that information went to the departure committee.
Not based on the record evidence, Your Honor. If you would want me to go outside the record, I can inform the court as to what was given to the departure committee. But
the farthest we've gone in terms of disclosure of exactly what went to the departure committee, I believe, is simply to suggest that it would be very useful if that were made clear to the court.
There has been a suggestion in Jones that would be useful, but we believe, given that the representations that the prosecutor made at sentencing, that the AUSA essentially followed the suggestion in Jones by referring to the December 5th memo and saying that she had submitted all the 5K information to the court. And also, in addition to that, at the sentencing, the AUSA represented that she had provided the departure committee with the nature and extent of the defendant's cooperation. That was in her November 30th sentencing memorandum. And at the sentencing, she also said that she had told the departure committee that the defendant had deliberately provided false information regarding his involvement.
And that's the disconnect I've had was the way the briefs approached this case, and then I read the sentencing transcript, and the sentencing transcript was all about the prosecutor just saying, well, he lied to me, and I was appalled, and that was it.
There were a lot of other issues.
That's a quote, appalling. It was appalling to me, so therefore I was not going to recommend it. And it was phrased in a very personal way. I was not going to, therefore, recommend a 5K 1.1.
I think the personal nature of that is that there's a particular prosecutor in our office that at that time was doing most, if not all, of these.
Yes, no, she explained her history doing these kinds of cases and then just said, you know, that thing was pending. His behavior was just so appalling to me as a prosecutor. I thought I had good faith, honest dealings with this young man, and later found out that what he said was not the truth. He did receive already a huge benefit even before I found out he had lied to me. And that was basically explanation. Then the district court basically says, well, that's a good enough reason not to, now I'm a transcript at 48. If the government believes a cooperator was untruthful in any way, that's perfectly legitimate basis to decline to make such a motion. But you're not really relying on that here.
Well, our point is that we believe that...
Which is fine, but I just want to make clear that you're relying on the fact that, okay, everything we did provide to the committee was full, even without the lie issue being in place.
Well, 2 points. First, that the information that was given to the committee was sufficient to fulfill the government's duty of fair dealing to this defendant. And in addition, that as the prosecutor explained, sentencing, the reason the 5K was not granted was because the defendant had been untruthful to her about his hands-on contact.
Can I ask you a hypothetical under this plea agreement as phrased? Suppose the prosecutor decided that the defendant had lied and therefore didn't give any information to the committee. Is that a breach of the plea agreement?
Well, I think that would be a breach because the plea agreement specifically says that your client understands that the assistance he provides to the government, including assistance he provided prior to the date of this agreement, will be submitted and considered to the departure committee.
Okay, but it earlier says that this is why I got hung up on this. It earlier says that it will relieve, if there's a false statement, it relieves the government of its obligations under the agreement. That's what I had read.
Well, you're not making
that argument, so that's fine.
No, we're not making that argument because that's not what happened here. Certainly the government could have said, I now know that you've lied to me. I'm not going to make any recommendation to the departure committee. But frankly, out of an abundance of fair dealing with this defendant, the government went ahead, the prosecutor went ahead and did give accurate information to the departure committee as required by the plea agreement, which simply said in paragraph 29 that the information needed to be about the nature and extent of your client's cooperation. And in paragraph 9, of the assistance that he gave will be submitted to and considered by the departure committee. The government did that, and it did it in a way that is materially the same as what the defendant would have liked to have put in front of the committee had he written the memo himself.
That's the standard, whether there's been material compliance in terms of the accurate disclosure to the departure committee.
Well, I believe there has been material compliance.
And you accept that as the proper standard?
That the compliance be material and accurate?
Yeah. Materially accurate.
Yes, I think that would be the proper standard, and that's what was done here. It was clear from the information that was provided that the target was, the quote was, is being prosecuted. So it's clear that he's not just potentially going to have a case or that he's being investigated. The prosecutor said that it was unknown what the disposition of the target's case, quote unquote, if any, what that is. So it's clear there's a case.
How do you respond to the public defender's arguments that, well, it wasn't the nature and extent of his cooperation hadn't really been made clear because it hadn't been communicated that this case was in federal court and that the defendant was facing significant time and, in fact, the case was scheduled for trial?
Well, the fact is that there's a case that was said. The fact that the disposition of the case, as the prosecutor had represented, wasn't known at that time. I mean, the case can be on track for trial or potentially a plea, but as we all know, a plea can fall through or trial may be rescheduled and so forth. So I think it was clear that there was an actual prosecution of this person going on, even though they didn't mention his name in the memo. It's clear that the prosecutor was aware of this person's name. It should be obviously implicit from the fact that he has a prior child pornography conviction and is a registered sex offender that he's going to be facing a lot of time. So the additional detail that defense counsel would now like to have seen the departure committee provided with isn't materially different than what was indeed provided in this case. And I think it's also important just to note, too, that the defense counsel made a point here that since the lie was around the time of his arrest in this case, that isn't somehow included in the plea agreement. That's really incorrect. The plea agreement is a backward-looking document in this case. If the court looks at paragraph 9, his assistance in this case all occurred shortly after his arrest.
Although this lie was before the before the agreement, but you're saying that doesn't matter.
Right. His cooperation and his discussions with the government in which he lied all occurred shortly after his arrest in May 2012. He actually entered the plea agreement in writing in September of 2012.
So one last thing. So the gap that I saw here between what I've talked about on the lie and then how the briefs portrayed this was that the district court seemed to just say it doesn't matter whether you want the extra nth degree in providing information to the departure committee because of the lie. So it didn't do what you said, which was what was provided to the departure committee was material compliance. I read the district court as saying that didn't matter so much because of the lie, at least at the bottom of transcript.
I guess I had read that almost in saying that the court was saying that essentially because the prosecutor had explained that the 5K motion hadn't been approved because of the defendant's untruthfulness, that the notion of going back to the departure committee with even more information and so forth wouldn't really make a difference because we know why the departure committee made its decision.
But I thought you said earlier that it would be a breach not to provide the departure committee with all the information. I think the district court was saying it doesn't matter because of the false statement.
I didn't understand the court to be making a decision on breach or not breach in that case at all. My point would be that, yes, his lie was a breach, but in this case the government still went ahead, even though under the plea agreement it didn't have to at that point, went ahead and informed the departure committee of his actual
You said his lie was a breach, but you didn't claim that in court. You didn't litigate this as a defendant's breach, all bets are off.
No, we didn't do that in this case. We still went ahead. I'm just saying that technically under the terms of the contract, that is a claim that we could have made, but we did not, in fact, make that claim here.
Counsel, you seem to have gone no farther than suggesting that it would be good if the government disclosed to the court what had gone to the departure committee. If it's only a suggestion, how in the normal case is the obligation of the government to fulfill that part of the plea agreement to be ascertained? I mean, here we have what both parties seem to agree is at least a close approximation of what went to the departure committee. So if the government ubiquitously accepts that, quote, suggestion, unquote, but if it is only a suggestion, how does the system work if the government chooses not to follow the suggestion?
But the defense would have to come forward with some information that shows that the government did, in fact, breach its plea agreement.
How on earth would the defendant know?
It may be difficult, as this court has noted, but as the court made clear in Henry Seal case, that even though that's difficult, and I believe Jones said also that there's no requirement that the government give an explanation of what's behind the decision. I think in a practical level,
it
may be quite difficult.
It's a perplexing problem, isn't it?
It is a perplexing problem. But in this case, we believe that the government did exactly what it was required to, if not more, under the plea agreement, and did, in fact, explain its decision to the district court. And for all those reasons, we respectfully request that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you.
It is correct that it's difficult for a defendant to know whether the government has breached by not providing complete information. I'd submit to the court that this case presents the closest picture the court has seen to knowing that the government didn't provide complete, full information to the departure committee. But I would like to address the court refers to whether the government materially complied or whether the information it presented to the departure committee was materially accurate. And I'd submit that neither of those standards is the correct standard. The standard is found in the plea agreement. the departure committee has to consider the full nature and extent of the defendant's cooperation.
Yeah, but as I understand it, the gaps that you identify between what was said and what happened don't relate to, let's say, don't involve precisely what the defendant did as additional characterizations of the prosecution that the defendant made possible.
Right, but that assumes...
Indeed, I mean, I understand that they add color and weight to what the defendant did, but I'm not sure that it's a failure of full disclosure to not have these things that the defendant doesn't actually do.
But that assumes that the only things that are important are what the defendant actually does. And once again, this court and the defendant do not know how the departure committee weighs anything. The departure committee could very well weigh if this defendant catches a guy who has distributed a million pictures, he's getting a 5K. And if he only catches a guy who distributed one, he's not.
Yeah, but that is sort of, let's assume that. I'm not sure if that's
right.
We'd like you, I don't know.
We don't know.
Looks at, but the gaps that you identify here don't seem to be on that scale at all.
I'm not suggesting that they are on that scale. But the court has identified the difficulty for us to present anything. We have presented something. They are not nothing. They are relevant. If they are a little relevant, then the departure committee needed to consider those things.
I'm a little concerned about the workability of the rule that I take you to be proposing. Imagine a case in which the departure committee is informed that subject that your client identified was facing trial, and then, in fact, the person was 3 days into trial, or the departure committee was informed that there had been a day of trial and there had in fact been 6 days of trial. I mean, there's always going to be further, as time passes, further progress. And so it seems like to make the rule that you propose workable, there would need to be some point at which you could say, this is the cooperation, we're willing to go forward and enter a plea, we the prosecution are willing to go forward and enter a plea agreement on this basis, and this is what we're going to inform the departure committee of.
You are absolutely correct, and the government is in the supreme position of drafting the plea agreement, and they can put that in the plea agreement. That is not, they took on the obligation of presenting full nature and extent of cooperation at the time the defendant gets to sentencing. That's the time we're talking about. So I wouldn't suggest to the court that the government would have to present something that they don't know yet, that hasn't occurred. But when the defendant arrives at sentencing, he is entitled to absolute strict performance, specific performance, under the terms of that plea agreement. So you are correct. It could be a difficult burden, but the government can draft the plea agreement so that they can say 10 days before sentencing. They can draft it. They can use whatever words they want. In this case, they did not. They assumed this obligation, and now the defendant is being made to bear the risk of them having failed to satisfy that obligation. That's not the way contract law works, and plea agreements are interpreted under contract law. I'd like to say just one last thing about the defendant's untruthfulness, because I understand that that's a concern, and I don't want to be dismissive of it. The plea agreement is all forward-looking. The paragraph that the court refers to where it requires the defendant to be truthful, every time it refers to anything, any obligation of the defendant, it says shall. It does not say should have been. It says shall be truthful. That is forward-looking language. So once again, a very strict interpretation of the plea agreement. I'm not suggesting that a defendant should be able to tell lies and that the government relies on those lies to his detriment. In this case, I will say that the defendant's lie, as the court points out, the prosecutor in the case took personally. but it did not impact the cooperation. It didn't impact his ability to testify.
I think the prosecutor even said that at the sentencing hearing. So said the cooperation had been good, but the lie was the reason for the not seeking the downward departure.
There's something else that I'll say about it. If this, the defendant's criminal history, essentially that's what the lie is, that I didn't do something that I actually did, is the lie. If it was that important and material to the government, they could have checked. And they did not. They did not find out about it until the pre-sentence report writer. The plea agreement, once again, I'm sorry to keep going back to the plea agreement, but that's all the defendant has to hold the government to its obligations. That's all he has to know what his obligations are. If the plea agreement is not saying, you shall disclose to us anything that you misled us about in an off-the-record debriefing that it took place before this plea agreement was entered, then he has no strict obligation to do it.
Okay.
Conversely, the government does.
Thank you, Mr. Axsom. Thank you for both sides for the argument. The case is submitted.